So, Anna, I did say at the end of the last episode that you were going to record the introduction to this one. What pearls of wisdom do you have to offer for a beautiful introduction right now?
No pressure. I don't think I've got any pearls. Just, you won't be disappointed with this, will you? You know, this, what this episode has got to offer is so informative and going to be hopefully really inspiring that it's going to be one not to miss. I mean, it's an easy introduction to do.
Insert generic introduction at the start of the podcast. Cue the ukuleles. Off we go.
Perfect.
Amazing. Amazing, Anna. Thanks for your contribution to that. Welcome to Slimming World Podcast. Anyway, she's Anna, I'm Claire. And we're back. Another episode of Slimming World Podcast. We're into our 80s now, which seems rather bananas. And we have a whole load of back catalogue. If you're using your lockdown period to catch up and just kind of get your head back in the game, that there's tons of different episodes that you can tap into right the way from, I'm trying to think, Anna, like forgiveness, embrace loneliness, letting guilt go. What else?
Social media. My favourite, when we went shopping. We've done clothes shopping, food shopping. You did some cooking. You cried in your bed. I did one at Christmas. You know, I love it when you get messages from people that have listened to one that's like a year old and they ask you a question and you're like, I don't even remember what I said on that podcast. But yeah, there's so many to go back on. There's something for every emotion you may encounter in your Slimming World journey, isn't there?
That's probably quite true, actually. And you'll notice from episode 1 to episode 60, we were actually called Slimming World Food for Thought Podcast, but now we are Slimming World Podcast and we are sponsored by Slimming World. So what that really is enabling us to do is to get access to some of the research, some of the new services, the new books, the new campaigns that Slimming World is actually doing. They're giving us a little nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And when we saw this one was on the table, we thought, this is something that we think is important. And Anna, you know a little bit more about diabetes than I do, but I've got to say, preparing for this episode, I've had my mind blown just learning all about diabetes. I come at this from someone who has heard about it, doesn't know very much about it, but I'll run through some of the statistics in a minute and I found it, wow, just breathtaking how big a deal diabetes really is.
It's in my life, it's been one of the most horrific illnesses that I've ever watched someone go through. And I think you don't realise probably how severe diabetes is if it's not well managed and controlled and the devastating effects it can have. You know, I lost my dad because of it. And it's something that you can so easily control, but if you don't, it wipes your body like the most horrific thing and just wipes your limbs out, your brain out, your eyes out. And it's something that I don't think, unless you've encountered it, you hear the word, but you truly understand it.
Now, what really shocked me, Anna, though, was reading how, you know, there are, 4.8 million people in the UK that have got diabetes, but a million of those people don't even know they have diabetes. And that's what really shocked me. And, you know, I was reading through, we'll get into this about the impact it has, the symptoms, when you start kind of being pre-diabetic, these kind of things. And I was really shocked because I kind of think back to myself, an extra 5 stone heavier. And I think looking back, I was in that stage where I was heading towards having type 2 diabetes. It really, really shocked me. And I hope that people listening to this, even if you don't have diabetes, I think this is worthwhile knowing. Because if there's one thing that we've learned is that anybody can have diabetes. So we're going to get into some of this, but we just need to kind of say a warning for you. The stories that we talk about here for me and Anna, these are our own personal experiences. We always say, speak to a healthcare professional. If you have any concerns, if you have any doubts, go to your GP, speak to a healthcare professional. We've also tagged in the episode description a link to Diabetes UK. So you can find that. It's diabetes.org.uk. And if you are a Swimming World member with diabetes, your consultant should already know about this anyway, but there is an Eating Well with Diabetes booklet, which you can get from your consultant. So that's the kind of the common sense legal stuff. Let's get into this, because we actually recruited someone to come and help us talk about this, because there's no way that me and Anna are doctors. As much as Anna loves to think that she is a doctor sometimes.
So am. Yeah.
She is not. But we have someone who actually has the DR at the start of their name, and it is Dr. Jackie Lavin, who you have been in Swimming World for a good while, Jackie. You've probably done a fair different few types of jobs, but your job right now is Head of Nutrition and Research. That sounds like a very, very important job at Swimming World.
Hi, it's lovely to be with you. Yes, and I just need to give that caveat that where I am actually doctor, I'm a doctor via research, so not a medical doctor, but my research is in health and food and appetite regulation. So I've got a health background, but I'm not a medical doctor.
But some of the stuff I've kind of been looking at what you've been writing and some of the research that Swimming World has done over the years. You know, this is stuff that's been featured in the journals of human nutrition and dietetics. So this isn't just something that people are doing, writing a few bits on a post-it note for a Swimming World plan. This research is going into official journals, because as a member, I actually had no idea that people like you and your team even existed. I mean, do you want to kind of just like recap for some of these idiots like me who don't really know what it is that you do and what goes into this?
No, and you shouldn't consider yourself an idiot at all. I think it is quite a surprise, actually. That's the wonderful thing about Swimming World, is we take the science and the health of our members really seriously. So Margaret, all those years ago, said she wanted to work with people who were from a variety of fields around health and research, which is so fantastic. So it's not a surprise that people don't realise that. And the great thing as well about our research is, you know, we do a lot. We do a huge amount of research. We're a small team at Swimming World, and we have got all our health team as well, and our nutritionists and dietitians. But what we're doing at the same time as informing our members and the company about what is the current best practice, what can we learn from our members, how can we continually make sure we get the best support out there, we're way ahead of the game in terms of public health. So we're sharing that via all our research that we publish, as you say, in you know, these top scientific journals. We're sharing that, and we're actually updating public health. And we're in a great position because all you fantastic members out there are helping us gather this information, whereas a lot of university academics, they don't have access to all these wonderful people that we do. And, you know, we can find out lots of things from our members who are really in the middle of their weight loss journeys and use that to advance the understanding of weight management in the UK and worldwide, actually. We present a lot of our research in international conferences as well.
Wow. Isn't that, I just love it. Like, as a consultant, of course, I know that, but I just love that we've got that strength behind us. Like, you know, the plan and all its kind of health policies are built on such amazing knowledge and understanding. Like, it just makes it even stronger, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we're real sticklers for detail as well. And we want, I mean, a lot of the teams, as I say, we've got nutritionists, we've got dietitians, we've got people from a psychology background, health psychology. So we're all from sort of health and research backgrounds. Because of that, we want to make sure everything is 100, or as Carol says, 110% accurate. We want to make sure we are not giving any messages or potentially some advice that we can't thoroughly, thoroughly back up with all the latest evidence. So I think it's because of our training and possibly just us as our personality and the type of sort of careers we went into around the sort of research and health, you can guarantee that we are checking things a million times over and making sure we get the best messages out there and the best support to our members.
Brilliant. Love that.
And that's how you've come to join us for this episode, isn't it? Because whilst there are many different things that fall under your umbrella, today's subject about diabetes is all linked to the fact that this month Swimming World has some new research out about some surveys that you've done. And also that last week marked Diabetes Week. for 2020, and a chance that they want organisations to raise more awareness about what it is, to help support people who have it. And so to mark that, Cyber World has come up with some research, which is more specifically, we'll get into the basics of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. There's two different types and a few other kinds as well. But this research is specifically for type 2 diabetes. Do you want to just kind of like set the scene? Because I have to say, I started researching this from very, very basic knowledge about what diabetes is, what's the difference between type 1 and type 2, before I even kind of understood, well, what is this research saying?
Yeah, so in terms of the research, the main aim of the research, and it's surveying our members, as you say, is to find out how our members are getting on who have diabetes. Is there anything that we need to know? Is there any more support we can give? And also, at the same time, you say, you would, as your introduction said, diabetes is such a serious condition. But at the same time, we know we've got great examples of our members who are doing so well, and they're really reducing their risks from their diabetes and the risks of other health conditions. So we wanted to gather that positive information as well, so we can share that to the wider public. So it's members who may have just joined and are a bit nervous because they have diabetes, but also those potential members out there who we know we can help. So there's sort of two aims really for the research. One, it's because we always want to make sure we're totally up to date. We're finding out how members are getting on. Is there anything else that they need? We know that dietary guidelines around diabetes management from healthcare teams can be very varied and they're changing all the time. So we need to make sure that we're supporting our members to fit in any special dietary requirements they have into our plan. As I said, at the same time, is really widen that public health knowledge, because we've got such a fantastic evidence base out there from our membership. So actually, the research covered any members who have diabetes, so both those with type 1 and also type 2. And also, actually, we were asking members to participate in the survey if they had pre-diabetes. Now, that's sort of the condition that's becoming a bit more well known, as you said earlier, that there's a lot of people out there who do not realise that they have diabetes. Because sort of public health, there's awareness now that there's so many, these sort of missing millions who don't realise, and we want to help support them before it gets too late. There's a big sort of push within public health to help people realise they're in this sort of pre-diabetes state, so their blood glucose levels are starting to change, but they're not quite at diagnosis. So members can be diagnosed now as with pre-diabetes. So we also invited those members to take part as well. But you're right that the focus we've done so far in terms of our reporting, because there's so much data and so much analysis to do, the poor team are working, you know, 10 to the dozen trying to get everything done. So we've really focused so far on those members who said they have type 2 diabetes. And that's what a lot of the data we've got and the stats around at the moment.
Can I just ask, so type 1 and type 2, the difference between these, in my very basic understanding, I assume that type 1 was genetic, and type 2 was something that you could get from your lifestyle choices. That's very basic. I don't know if that's true. That's the myth that I had in my head.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation. I mean, in terms of genetics, yes, for type 1, very much it's influenced by genetics. And that's quite often diagnosed much earlier in life, because it's where your insulin, and insulin is a hormone that's released in the body and it helps you regulate your blood glucose or your blood sugar levels. And it's where that isn't working properly, it's not being released properly, and that's normally because of some sort of genetic factor. And unfortunately, there's nothing you can do. So you can never sort of get rid of your type 1 diabetes. You can manage it and you control it as best you can. There's lots of support out there, and you'll be under a healthcare team to help manage that. You might need to have insulin. Most people will, if they have type 1 diabetes, they'll have to have insulin, which they need to inject into their body because the body's not producing the right amount. With type 2 diabetes, again, there can be a genetic influence, that because of your genes, you might be more prone to developing it. But you're right, that is very much sort of strongly influenced by lifestyle factors, and weight and increasing weight and weight gain is one of the biggest risk factors for developing type 2 diabetes. So both can be sort of supported and helped you control and manage your diabetes via sort of a healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, being physically active. but it's really, really key for type 2 diabetes. And the same for pre-diabetes as well. Pre-diabetes is sort of the stage before getting type 2 diabetes. So again, if you can really support your weight management, have a healthy diet, be active, you can actually prevent yourself from developing type 2 diabetes.
So what are the signs? You know, if we're saying that not a lot of people, a million people don't know they have it, or many of us are showing as pre-diabetic, what are the signs that people should know to watch out for?
So one of the signs actually is an increase in thirst and wanting to go to the toilet a lot more often. So one of the things that Diabetes UK will be saying to watch out for is getting up quite regularly in the night to have to go to the toilet and being very thirsty. A lot of doctors now, if you visit the doctor and they think there are signs that you could have diabetes, so there'll be the risk factors are things like weight gain, and they might ask you about your diet and activity levels. So they will then do blood tests. So quite often they're sort of doing blood tests on more and more people now, just to double check the blood glucose levels. And it's when the blood glucose levels go out of the normal range that they decide someone either has pre-diabetes or they have type 2. But it's just, as an individual, it's that increase in thirst, going to the toilet more often, feeling very, very tired as well, because your glucose helps give the body and lots of organs in the body that energy. So if your glucose can't work properly because the levels aren't correct, then it's not getting to the organs. So it can make you feel very, very tired and lethargic as well.
That's what sent my dad to the doctor 46 years ago, was literally just getting up 10 or 12 times in the night to go to the toilet. Yeah. And it was just the biggest indicator. But now, like I had a reoccurring infection that just wouldn't heal. And so the first thing the GP said was, let's check out that you're not diabetic. I'm not, but that's what they do if you come with symptoms like that, infections that won't go, or things like reoccurring thrush and stuff, don't they? So there are a lot of kind of very subtle warning signs that you may not even recognise yourself if you don't know what to look out for.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's really key to be in contact with your GP practice if there's something just doesn't feel quite right. My own dad actually had type 2 diabetes and he was the same. It was, he actually got a lot of backache and then realised he was getting up in the night quite a lot to go to the toilet. So the same thing. And it's, I think, you know, a lot of doctors and nurses now are very much aware of these, so many people, and you say this undiagnosed condition, that any sort of signs, they will be automatically taking a blood test and checking for diabetes.
Do you know what I love about the fact with my dad had type 1, so, you know, it was kind of out of his hands, but type 2, you can, if you manage your lifestyle, you can almost like put it into remission, reverse, you know, as far as it will go. But you can absolutely make some real small changes and have such an impact, can't you, on your actual health, which is an easy thing to do.
You know what's really fantastic from this survey that we've just done with our members? So in terms of those members who'd had type 2 diabetes, there's over half of them were saying they already felt that they'd reversed their diabetes because of Slimming World.
Wow.
And losing weight and eating healthy, which is fantastic news. It's really amazing.
I've had a few members in my career as Slimming World who that's the reason they come, and the results they've had, you know, just losing 10% of what they started out with has been so huge. And they've enjoyed doing it as well, because I think the fear that a lot of members come in with when they're diagnosed as diabetic is that they can't eat anything that they like anymore. And then they find that within the realms of food optimizing, they've got so much flexibility, haven't they? That almost takes the fear away a little bit.
It does. I mean, there's a lot of mixed messages as well. You're right, Anna, about what should I eat if I have diabetes? And, you know, I need to have all these special products that's going to cost me a fortune. And you don't have to. The guidelines is around healthy eating, which world to a T, isn't it? It's food optimizing. And we do know that, you know, there are some specific requirements for individual members that they might have to watch certain things, or if they're on insulin, they might have to be matching their food with their insulin at the time they're having insulin, their insulin doses. So there's lots of individual requirements. But that's why we continually find out from our members how it's working. And again, the great thing is that the survey results so far are showing us that the majority of our members are saying, no matter, we can see they're getting completely varied advice from the diabetes care team, but they're able to fit it into food optimizing because it's so flexible. And it's great, you know, as you said at the beginning, that we have the book available in group for all our members with diabetes. So there's lots of advice in there, and it links to the Diabetes UK guidance. And then, you know, working with the group consultant as well, just to make sure it fits in any of those individual needs. But we're seeing, and again, already the majority of our members, 75% of them are members with type 2 diabetes, saying, I find it really easy to fit in my dietary requirements into food optimizing. It's not a problem at all.
Yeah, totally. And how their quality of life is then impacted by making those changes. Because when your blood sugar is a spiking as a diabetic or dropping and you're going into hypo, I don't think, unless you've experienced or known anybody, that how poorly you can actually be. And actually, by food optimizing and allowing your blood sugars to regulate, how well you can be. I remember one diabetic lady saying to me, she said, I feel like I'm alive again. She said, I used to feel so exhausted, so tired, so stressed with it. And now I feel like I'm back to myself. So that's a lovely thing for making some really small changes.
Yeah, and you're right. The small changes, I think, is really, really key. That's the key message, because, again, people are scared and they think, I'll never be able to eat the foods that I wanted, or I'll have to have this really restrictive diet. Almost a liquid diet and never be able to have the same meals as my family. You can, and we've got so many members who can share that experience of just making those adaptations to the favorite family meals, as you do all the time in, you know, talk about in group. And it's just those small changes that can actually, and a lot of our members say this, it's given them their lives back. Some of our members are coming to us after being diagnosed with diabetes, being told by the healthcare team that you've reduced your life expectancy, you might die very soon. And we've got some fabulous case studies of our members losing, you know, the lady, Tracy, one of our members up in Fife, who supported us with our work during Diabetes Week last week, she lost 16 stone. She was told she, you know, wow, years to live. She lost 16 stone. She loved the groups. She really felt that regular support from the groups.
So when you kind of say she was told she had a few years to live, I think what I found really shocking was the impact, like diabetes then kind of can spiral into other things. Things like, you know, the chance of heart attacks or strokes is like 2-3-fold increase. Anna mentioned there about chance of going blind, kidney failure, I mean, nerve damage.
Well, look at my dad.
To amputation.
Yeah. Dad ticked every box. Dad lost both his legs, kidney failure, 5 heart attacks, a stroke, diabetic neuropathy, was losing his eyesight. He actually died in the end of pneumonia, but it was the infections that he couldn't control. And this was from a diabetic that didn't manage his food well. He was type 1 diabetic, which was caused by, you know, an autoimmune system illness that was exacerbated by steroids. But what, you know, what got him in the end was that he walked around with blood sugars of 29 to 36. Now, the average blood sugar should be around 3 to 5. So in the end, you know, what killed him was what he had eaten in his lifetime. And I don't think that unless you understand diabetes, you think it's just you can't have much sugar. That's what a lot of people say to me. But actually, what it does is ripped through your organs, doesn't it? And there's nothing I'm more terrified illness-wise, and you know, I've been through a lot of illness, than would be to get diabetes and not manage it well. Because if it's not managed well, that's when the repercussions are so horrendous, aren't they? So I think that's what's really inspiring to see with these people in this case study, how they have probably turned their likelihood of ending up like my dad actually to, you know, having a healthy lifestyle now.
Mm. Yeah, when you say like you lose 10% of your body weight, like what does that really mean? Because we kind of hear that one of the things that of how type 2 diabetes develops, it's like the fat that you store around your liver and your pancreas, that kind of can lead onto it. Have I kind of got that right? I'm just trying to understand, because Club 10, I mean, basically when most members are like, great, it's a free week in 10 weeks and it's another certificate and it's another sticker, but there's a serious side behind it.
Yeah, so the 10% weight loss, yeah, there's so many health improvements you can start to see with just a 10% weight loss. I mean, in terms of diabetes, and again, we're talking about type 2 diabetes here, so as you're gaining weight, it's putting an extra demand on your body, and you start getting this effect called insulin sensitivity. So your body starts pumping out more insulin, because that's all linked to your sort of fat stores and inflammation and all these things that go on in your body as you're gaining more body fat. So your body starts producing more and more insulin. because it's producing so much, you start getting, it's this insensitivity. Your body, your cells that need to respond to the insulin are just bombarded with it, so they don't react to it correctly. The insulin, in normal circumstances, is there to help when you eat food and you've got glucose going around your body, when you've broken down carbohydrates, that helps it go into the cells and the storage and be used by the body. Because that insulin isn't working, your blood glucose levels are staying high. They're not going into the body cells. And this sort of, if you're constantly having really, really high glucose levels, that starts to damage your blood vessels. And this is linked to some of those symptoms and really severe conditions you described, Anna, about people can go blind. It can affect the really small blood vessels, say in your feet and your hands. And that's why a lot of people, unfortunately, have to have feet amputated or even legs. It's because the blood supply has been affected and the blood isn't getting to the limbs anymore. Same with the eyes. There's such tiny blood vessels in your eyes. If they're all getting damaged by the glucose, they're only tiny blood vessels in the first place. They just can't get the right amount of blood and the right nutrients and oxygen and things to things like your eyes and to your feet. And unfortunately, that's what causes this really severe damage. And you're right, Claire, that, you know, I think in terms of diabetes, people do sort of say, oh, that's that thing with sugar, isn't it? You just need to give up sugar and you're all right. And it's no, that there's so many serious conditions that you can get if you aren't able to control your glucose levels and control your diabetes. But as we're saying now, that the great thing is we know there's so many things we can do to help and really prevent those severe conditions.
I mean, like, I found shocking, I don't know if you know this, Anna, but there are more people with diabetes in the UK than cancer and dementia combined.
Wouldn't surprise
and,
me, yeah.
You know, like the World Health Organization calling this a global epidemic,
yeah,
and saying it's the seventh leading cause of death across the world. And I'm like, what? How have I just slipped past and thought, as you say, Jackie, oh, it's just something to do with any have a bit too much sugar. Like,
I don't think.
Wow, why do more people not know about this?
I don't think it's well publicised, though, is it? Like, I have such an in-depth knowledge on it because of my experience. But if you don't know someone with diabetes, or you just know someone with diabetes that's maybe well controlled, who isn't very symptomatic, hasn't had to really seek much medical attention, you might not know. I only know because I've seen so many professors with dad been through so much. But I think there's a kind of, it's with a lot of things. Like, I used to think that cancer led to death. You know, it doesn't have to. And that's like with diabetes, people think, well, I just won't eat that sugar or have that ice cream and it'll be all right. It's kind of the other way, isn't it? And I don't know, maybe we're just not taught about it, or we just don't know. What do you think, Becky?
I agree. I think, you know, things like cancer has just become known as a very serious condition. And you're right, there's so many things we can do now around cancer and early diagnosis and the treatments that it doesn't ultimately lead to death. Whereas diabetes, because I think a lot of it is because of the type 2 diabetes is considered a lifestyle condition. So it's almost, I think people, unfortunately, there's a lot of stigma around weight, and people, if they're overweight, they, as we know, with a lot of our members, they can feel that level of shame and don't want to go to the doctors and have something diagnosed, or they don't talk about it as much because they almost feel that people are blaming them and saying, well, it's because of your lifestyle and the way you've eaten. And I think that's something that as a nation we really need to overcome, and that's that this sort of stigma and feeling of discrimination around weight. And it's about getting support out there, getting that message that actually there's a lot of things we can do to help. And yeah, I think it's just because people haven't realised what a serious condition it is, and they think it's merely down to what somebody's eaten, and they think it's merely down to the fact that people can easily change their diet and what they're doing, and don't realise but all the support that's needed and all the emotions and everything that we know are linked to food, and how it's so important to get that support out there and really help members find a way of eating a healthier diet and finding a way of being more active and leading a healthier lifestyle so they can get all these benefits.
Yeah. See, I also think that sometimes when you are bigger, you kind of, well, I know I started to normalise things.
Yeah.
So like it was normal that my back hurt when I woke up in the morning because my belly was so big and sleeping on my side. It was normal that my knees ached after I'd been walking, or in the summer that my body was really swollen, having excess fluid because it couldn't handle the heat. It was normal to have IBS and, you know, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's almost just like I kind of just accepted that that was the way. And it's only when I started to kind of lose the weight, I was like, oh, I don't feel that way anymore. So I wonder whether a lot of people who might be pre-diabetic or actually have diabetes and not realize it are just perhaps normalizing, well, that's just how it is and that's just how I am.
100%. That's how my dad kind of didn't get diagnosed for so many years, because he normalized those things. And it wasn't until he had got so sick with it and, you know, going to the toilet so much that he went, well, yeah, maybe I should go to the doctor. But I also think we try to appease ourselves when, like you and I, you know, had quite a bit of weight to lose. We want to go under the radar. So if we say, oh, God, this is OK, we don't have to see the doctor. We don't have to be told that this is because we're fat, because we're overweight, and get told off again. So unless it's really smacking you in the face and you're feeling really sick, you just don't do anything about it, do you? It's going back to that stigma again.
It is, yeah. People are scared. The people, you know, they're almost, I think a lot of people are scared of maybe the diagnosis. Of what is it actually? So they know, you know, people can normalize it, and potentially scared of being judged as well. That if they go to a doctor or a nurse and it is linked to their weight, they don't want to feel judged by that. And I think there's another important point as well. I think a lot of people are possibly feeling there's nothing they can do. And I think that's why it's really key to get this message out there, that they might be thinking, well, I can't lose weight. I don't know how to do it, or it's never going to work. And it's getting that message out there that it can, and you just need the right place, and you need the support, and you need the right information as well. I mean, how many people do we know, members, when they've joined us, they've tried every single other fatty diet and it didn't work, and they think it's them. They think it's them that's the failure. I can't lose weight. I can't be like someone else. And it's that message of like, no, you're not a failure at all. It's the fatty diets and everything else you've tried that's failed you. And there is support out there. So I think that's what, you know, really key and been fantastic with, you know, Diabetes Week. It is getting that message out there that there are things you can do, and the right support and the right help and the right dietary approaches out there for you.
Yeah. And do you know, actually, they're not going to be alone and be the only member in that group with diabetes. Like, I look at my membership base and I see how many of them are diabetic and managing themselves with food optimizing. So you're not going to stick out like a sore thumb, and we are going to know how to help and support you as well. Because I think maybe they think they're going to come along and we've not got a clue what to do, but we really have as consultants and as an organization, haven't we?
Definitely, yeah. There's lots of support. Yeah, I think the other members as well can help with the
exactly
tips.
Yeah.
They're the best people to help with tips.
It's like one in 15 people in the UK have diabetes. So what are the chances in a group of 30 that there will be somebody else in your group that will also have diabetes? I just want to run through some of the stats. So when we were reading through the research that you came out with, one of the things I was quite interested in is this idea of what difference losing 10% body weight made with people who had this type 2 diabetes. And you know, you guys were talking about how the members came back and said 2/3 were able to reduce or stop taking medication. And actually, more than 1 in 5 were able to stop taking medication completely. They saw improvement in quality of life, better blood glucose management. 82% said that they were able to be more active. So, you know, this idea with, you know, reversing conditions, or I think Diabetes UK call it you going into remission, because there's still a chance that diabetes could come back if you don't continue to keep up with managing your weight and your activity. But with things like, you know, going back on medication, I'm imagining that members who have diabetes don't just kind of lose the weight. They've also got the support of their GP or healthcare teams behind them who kind of manage that process of coming off medication.
Yes, definitely. So if you're diagnosed with diabetes, you will have regular, hopefully, certainly at the moment, there's still regular appointments with your diabetes care team. So some of that might be hospital-based, or it might be in your local practice. You might have a diabetes specialist nurse. So you will be having regular checks. I think as the years go on, it tends to be less frequent. You get a lot more frequent checks and appointments with your practice initially. But you will have your blood glucose checked now and again to see how things are going. Not all people who have type 2 diabetes have to have medication, but if the condition progresses and the blood glucose levels aren't really staying in the sort of healthier range, you possibly would have to go on to some medication to help with that. But yeah, you're right, that the great thing is, with type 2 diabetes, you can bring your blood glucose levels back down to a normal level and put it into remission. And you're quite right, Claire, that you know it will never go away, but you may have blood glucose levels in the normal range and they may never, ever go up. So it almost has reversed. So there's a bit of debate at the moment whether you can say reversed or it is remission. But that is with a healthy lifestyle. And the great thing was, yeah, I was surprised how many of our members already with a 10% weight loss were saying that they've reduced the need for medication. She's also those who'd lost a bit more and were with us a bit longer completely stopped their need for diabetes medication. But on top of that, as we mentioned before, that diabetes is linked to all these other health conditions. So a lot of members with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, may be on high blood pressure medication and all sorts of different medication. We also know by losing weight and managing the blood glucose levels, they've managed to come off other medications as well as a diabetes medication. So, I mean, it's a great public health message. We should be getting more and more members referred to us because we're saving the National Health Service a fortune in pharmacy costs.
You know, someone who I've got an incurable illness, and I just always think if you got a shot with your own health that you could fix it, oh my God, grab it. Because actually, just by changing what you're eating and adding some activity, you're going to extend your life, you're going to feel good, you're going to get all that. You know, no one wants to put medicine in their body, but we do it because it makes us better. It's such an easy and quick fix, isn't it? Because, you know, you could lose 10% of your starting weight or what the equivalent of like 10 kilos, couldn't you? Really quite rapidly and safely. And, you know, for anybody out there kind of in this situation we're in right now, it could be something that just starting today could kind of have that domino effect on your health very quickly, couldn't it?
Definitely. And I think that that combination of a healthy, sensible diet and physical activity is the world's best medicine. It's a drug in one. It's better than about 10 drugs you could be taking for your diabetes, your risk of stroke, your high blood pressure, everything else, your cholesterol levels. It's this magic drug in one, and it's something that we can all do. And I think activity, you mentioned that, Claire, is really key as well, that, you know, 82% of our members saying that they're more active, which is great. So I think losing weight and getting that confidence around changing the diet helps a lot of our members become more active. Now, if they become more active and they keep that up, that is the best, one of the best things they can be doing for maintaining that weight loss and maintaining those health improvements. So again, it's this win-win. So not a vicious cycle, it's a really positive cycle. It's the, you know, losing weight, changing your diet, getting that confidence, starting to be active. If you're regularly active, you're going to really keep that weight off and maintain those health benefits.
And I guess for anybody out there who's like thinking about embarking on a weight loss journey, starting it now could reduce your likelihood so massively of becoming pre-diabetic or diabetic that you might never need to get into that situation. So it's almost like something that you could do to stop it, couldn't you? Because the thing is, it's in your hands either way. The healthy eating could help you reverse it, but it could also stop you kind of getting it. So
it's like a given non-scale victory, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're talking about like 10% weight here, but we're also talking about mega non-scale victories. Like, I think this is where, like, we always bang on about how I'm a geek and love my journaling. But you talk, Anna, about like measuring your inches. Mm. And like, if we were to kind of capture some of these ways that we're feeling our energy levels, just grab a piece of paper and just write that out right now, whatever your normal might be. Mm. And as you start to go through the weight loss journey, keep that food and mood diary like you were talking about last week, Anna. And that's, I think, those are the things that you see, not just what the numbers are on the scales.
Totally. And such, for me, as I get older, the more I think about what am I actually doing to my body and how I've only got this one body and I've got to look after it in the best way I possibly can. You know, as my dad was dying, you know, how he said to me, dig your own grave with a spoon like I've done, you know, that rings so true in my ears, because I know if Dad had managed his diabetes, he'd still be here today and not have died so young and so horribly. So I think it's such a gift that you've got to change it. It's just sometimes really frightening to do that, isn't it? So focusing on the habit change and the positive rather than the daunting experience of it.
I suppose also, like, is it also the impact around the other people that you're with? So if you have type 2 diabetes and you live in a household with other people, chances are that you've been having and sharing the same lifestyle, perhaps quite sedentary, eating the same kind of meals. The chance may be that the habits that you formed could be passed on to your children. And whilst type 2 isn't necessarily genetic like type 1, lifestyles and habits are.
Definitely. You're completely right there that those sort of habits and that sort of family environment can make it look like there's a genetic factor in some of these conditions. And what's really scary is over the last few years is just seeing the increase in diagnosis of type 2 diabetes in young people. Teenagers have actually got type 2 diabetes because of their blood glucose levels, because they've started, you know, a lot of their life, they've been overweight. And unfortunately, because those blood glucose levels have remained high for that length of time already, they're getting to the teenage years, already 20s, and they're being diagnosed with a condition that's, I mean, when I first started in this field, it was, I mean, when I went to lectures around diabetes, we were told, yeah, type 2 diabetes starts to be seen from about the age of 40. In my time in the swimming world, in 20 plus the years of swimming world, now we're seeing teenagers diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
And what impact does that have? Yeah, you know, to be diagnosed that young surely must have huge impacts.
Definitely. But the great thing is, because someone's so young and actually helping them, supporting them in that family environment, you can just switch that round, help them right now that the diabetes is in remission, and they've got many, many years ahead of them, a really, really healthy life, because their bodies are still young and, you know, they've adapted to it. So it's the best time to really be supporting the rest of the family as well, and really helping prevent your kids from getting it as well.
Well, it's like anything that's unmanaged or existent for a longer time is going to wreak more havoc. You know, my dad had actively periods of being managed and unmanaged for over 40 years. And if he hadn't been diagnosed 10 years, it wouldn't have ripped through his body like it did. So if you're newly diagnosed and young, jump on it, get healthy eating and being active, and you can press that button to turn it back, can't you? It's really simple.
So, I mean, the only thing I was just going to kind of get my head around was, I don't know, like I was reading up on hypoglycemia. It's really hard to say, really hard to spell. I mean, just as if you need any more help when you've got diabetes, here's some really long words and some complex medication to get your head round. So the hypoglycemia attack, I mean, I was kind of thinking, if somebody was having a hypo attack in front of me, what would I do? Because, like, my myth in my head would be like, give him a chocolate bar, give him a can of Coke. But that's not really necessarily the best thing to do.
I don't think, though, I don't know what you've read about hypos. And sorry, Jackie, if you're going to say something different. But a hypo, unless it's very severe, is not something that's like a choking fit where you've got to intervene. It can be very slow burning. It can normally, how it worked in my dad was a mood. So he'd get quite angry and quite grumpy, and we'd know his blood was dropping. So he would take something like a banana to pick it up, or something like a tea with a teaspoon of sugar, or something that wasn't going to give you a massive sugar hit and then a crash. Only in very extreme cases where the blood sugar, and it would normally be on waking, had dropped overnight, would you see kind of more, I don't know, more scary symptoms. But what I've seen of a lot of diabetics is that they know, like, Dad would always have a packet of digestive biscuits, seem to bring it up, a banana, need be a glucose tablet, because it can raise very quickly. You just have to know what your symptoms are. So I don't know, Jackie, if that's kind of right, but that's what I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree that most people will be able to sense it. They know themselves, and they'll have their own solution, and they'll have something with them that's going to treat them. You say, you know, bananas will work if it's early enough, because bananas take a bit longer to digest, but that is early enough when you've recognized it. It might get to the stage where you might need that really sort of quick hit of sugar, and a glucose tablet would do that. So most people will be able to sense it coming on and will know what to do. It's quite rare that someone would go to that extreme in terms of hypoglycemia that they wouldn't be able to control themselves and be able to self-medicate. There is something about that you can also get similar symptoms with hyperglycemia, just to throw another long word out there. And that's when, so hypo is when your blood sugar levels drop really low and you need to get some sugar inside you. Hyper is when they're really high and it can cause a similar condition. Again, most people would know what's happening and be able to control that. But I think if someone is in that extreme condition, the best bet, as well as calling for healthcare services, is to probably find something that can raise those blood sugar levels really, really quickly. And in terms of our membership, of course, the most important thing is their health. So yes, if that's some sugar, you know what, that's the most important thing to do now. And I know it has some sins in it, but we've got to help them right now with this medical emergency. But just to move on as well, in terms of our members, we do get quite a few queries from members who have type 2 diabetes to say, well, I'm a bit worried about if I have a hypo and I need my glucose tablet, or I might need a bit of glucosade, or I might need a banana, which is a really good option. How does that fit with Food Optimized, especially when their personal trick is something that would normally be sinned? Now, our message is the most important thing is your health. What we can help you with, though, is working out, especially if you have type 2 diabetes or if you have type 1 diabetes, is how do we help you control your blood glucose levels in the longer term? So let's look about, you know, what you're eating. If you're having these slow-release carbohydrates, so your whole grains and your whole wheat, potatoes with the skins on, so those foods are going to help your blood glucose levels remain stable, and things like your bananas and those sort of things. Let's work on that rather than you having 3 hypos a day, which is the thing that possibly you should be going back to your healthcare team about. But it's about thinking longer term, not just this, what do I do every time I've got a hypo, which could be lots of times a day. It's like actually there's a lot of things we can do with food optimizing to help you manage that so you're not getting so many hypos. And then when you do what you need to do, and we will manage that and support you with the weight loss around that as well.
I mean, isn't that just, whether you've got diabetes or not, that to me sounds like, as someone who's kind of really struggled with, I've got lots of energy, a dip in energy, I felt like I've been low in iron, a bit anemic, you know, when your sugar's all over the place, actually learning to kind of do a few of these swaps to keep your blood sugar level going and feel better overall. So you're just kind of topping up you're at your fuel, aren't you? Rather than kind of taking it, like taking a car out and being too much of a stingy knobhead to like actually fill up for a full tank. You're just constantly putting a fiver in. Yeah. Come on, we've all done that at uni, right?
But, yeah, your analogy, you know, love that. Best analogy you've done in a long time, Claire.
But there's something in that. And I'm just trying, you know, I can take that advice as someone who doesn't have diabetes, that I see what the thinking is behind that.
Yeah, it's all about prevention. It's working with that and preventing it happening in the first place, rather than it happening a lot and then you're at the sticking plaster stage, aren't you? It's almost like, let's just try and sort it out now. It's about going back to that root cause. How can we prevent it happening in the first place? And because food optimizing is so flexible, that we can really help there.
Oh, wow. So excited for those people that are just encountering or starting on their journey, maybe as food optimizing and diabetic or pre-diabetic, how, you know, 3-6 months, they could see such a massive change in their lifestyle. It's been one of my biggest passions since my dad passed away, was to help any member that walked in my door with diabetes or was on that verge to just stop it in its tracks, because, you know, I never want someone to go through what dad went through or watch that. So, you know, I think to anyone out there that's maybe listening and a bit frightened, don't be, because you're going to get to eat loads, and that's the best bit of food optimizing to me, eating.
And I guess for the rest of us, it's also, hey, we did something here to stop us getting to that point in the first place. So whatever if you are someone who has had a gain this week, if you're someone who's not losing, just write this down as a win, that you're not putting yourself at risk of diabetes right now, because it is a win without you even realizing it.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think if you have diabetes as well, I think the key message there is, you know, it might take a while before you're having blood tests and you can see your blood glucose levels going down. But with diabetes, and if you're getting a lot of symptoms because of it, you know, just even those first few weeks of weight loss, you might actually start seeing some improvements and really feeling those things. So, you know, you don't even need to wait. Like the clinical measure, which is the glucose, you will start feeling fantastic.
Oh, exciting times. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. So obviously this research is going to be online for people to read. There's also the help with diabetes.org.uk, which we've tagged, as I said, in the description. If people want to just go find out a little bit more, there's videos, there's all different kinds of things on there, isn't there? But it's really great to meet you, Jackie, because we hear so much about you and the great work that your team's doing. And it's a nice for us to use our platform to kind of peer underneath the carpet of what on earth is going on in your team. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me as well. It was lovely to chat to you, and it's lovely to be able to get that message out there to our members and potential members as well, to really help lots of people, more people in the future.
Yeah.
Hopefully. So this has been a bit of a different episode, but just helping you kind of nerd out, like myself and Anna are doing, about every corner of going on a weight loss journey. If you have any questions, if you want to reach out with us and you want to share your story, perhaps you have had diabetes, perhaps you have diabetes and you want to share your story with us, you can email us slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Instagram @slimmingworldpodcast. Anna, I'm going to hand over to you. Seeing as you did the introduction so well, I'm going to pass to you to come up with some kind of beautiful ending, because you did it so well last episode.
You see, I don't know what the next episode is, so I haven't got a segue into the next episode, which is what I wanted. So I'm just going to say thank you so much for listening. You are we're really grateful. No, please keep in contact with us and spread the word. Especially this episode, because it might really just help someone out there that's having a struggle, who's newly diagnosed or needs some help and support. So thank you so much for listening. You can also go back to that podcast blog as well if you're feeling like you need a bit of help in different areas. But yes, bye for now. She's Claire and I'm Anna.
Oh, you said it so well that I can't even take the mick out of you now. All I can do is just let the ukuleles fade up. Oh, you did a good job. I'm just gonna leave you to do all the intros and outros. How about that?
Oh, thanks.
See you later.
Bye.